Holy God, oil the hinges of our hearts' doors, that they may swing gently and easily to welcome your coming. Amen. From his prison cell, Paul watched, fascinated. Through the cell's bars, with nothing else much to occupy his time or his attention, Paul observed as an ordinary man transformed himself. The man had arrived at the jail in his civvies, a simple toga, worn sandals. The man was unremarkable, another working stiff, punching in for the day. But then, before Paul's very eyes, this man began to transform himself. Shedding his toga and slipping out of his sandals, he donned a smart, dark gray tunic. He slipped his feet into strong leather shoes. He tied decorated greaves or shin guards to his legs and thick leather cuffs to his wrists. He fastened a wide tooled belt around his waist, and from it he hung his dagger. He lifted a heavy, decorated metal breastplate onto his chest, put his arms through the straps, and fastened it in back. He swung a red cape around his shoulders and fixed it to the shoulders of his breastplate. Onto his head, he lifted a polished helmet with a red plume. With his left arm, he took up his shield, and with his right hand, he lifted his sword. And there he stood, a man transformed from civilian to soldier, from inconspicuous to striking, from ordinary to powerful. A man whose authority and command derived from the very Emperor of Rome. The soldier, now ready for work, took up his place, standing at attention, guarding the prison in which Paul was locked up. Paul, putting pen to parchment, began writing to fellow Christians about what he had just observed. Being a Christian, he wrote, being a Christian is a lot like being a soldier. On our own, we are nothing. We are unremarkable and we are weak. Until we don the clothing of Christ and take up the tools of discipleship. On our own, he wrote, we are woefully ill-equipped, you and I, lacking in defenses against injury, but also lacking the apparatus, the tools, the weapons by which we might do some good. Well, some 200 years after Paul observed this man turn himself into a soldier in front of his very eyes, some 200 years later, a certain baby was born, a Roman baby, born into a military family. The baby's father was the senior officer in Rome's Imperial Horse Guard. The baby was named Martin, after Mars, the Roman god of war. Today we know him as Martin of Tours. As a young boy, Martin loved to help his father prepare for work. Young Martin would watch and help as his father donned the pleated tunic, tied greaves and wrist guards to his limbs, girded his waist with belt and weapons, fastened the heavy breastplate and donned his red cape. Putting his helmet under his arm, the officer would bend to kiss Martin goodbye, then kiss his wife, and then sweep out the door to his military duties. At a young age, however, and against his parents' express wishes, young Martin gravitated toward the Christian church. He loved the hymn singing and the intensity of worship. He was drawn toward the rituals of bread and cup and the disciplines of righteousness to which the church beckoned his heart and soul. Well, appalled by his son's interest in this strange religion, his father forced Martin to join the Roman army. But when he turned 18, Martin was baptized as a Christian, and it was then that he requested to be released from the army. "I am Christ's soldier," he said. "I am not permitted to fight." And he left the army. Martin of Tours went on to become a bishop and later was named a saint of the Roman Catholic Church. His story reminds us of what most people on earth, including Christians today, have ceased remembering. That it was the practice of the earliest followers of Christ to abstain from fighting, to refuse to serve in the army, and to refrain from killing. Before Augustine made a case for just war, before Constantine took up the sword in the name of Christ, the consensus of the early Christian leaders, those who knew Jesus best, the consensus was that discipleship was a peaceful vocation. That against the inclinations of a violent world, we would pursue peace in the name of the Prince of Peace. Today we pause to remember that Christians and others are not always engaged in pursuing peace, and that the pursuit of peace is difficult indeed. Today we pause to remember that on August 6, 1945, the world was forever changed by a single act of violence. Today we remember that shattering moment and its aftermath. We remember it was the first time any nation used nuclear weapons against another. We remember the 140,000 who were killed. We remember a city decimated by heat and fire and by the effects of radiation and cancer. We remember. Our sisters and brothers from the New England Peace Pagoda are here to help us remember by walking, singing, chanting, drumming, lobbying, pleading for peace. But we gather on this Sunday to mark other kinds of violence as well. We remember that July, this past July, was the deadliest month for U.S. troops in Afghanistan yet. 42 were killed. We remember the rising rate of suicide among American soldiers returning home from wars. We remember that in recent months there has been a dramatic rise in murders and suicides among civilians, a rise which many suspect is a direct consequence of our economic woes of unemployment and crushing debt. We remember that a rash of assault rifles has broken out on the streets of this city. We remember that youth violence in our city streets is a tragedy for which all of us bear some responsibility. Long ago, from his jail cell, St. Paul wrote to Christians like us, Christians who live in a dangerous and violent world. And this is what he said. This is what he writes to us. My brother and sister Christians, early in the morning, as others are dressing for work, so too must you dress for your work as a Christian. When you rise up from your sleep, before your first cup of coffee, before you take the dog out for a walk, before you spread the newspaper out before you, before anything else, before everything else, fasten a belt of truth around your waist. Because this world is full of untruth, of lies, of misinformation, of spin, of truthiness. And without that belt of truth, my brother and sister Christians, it is easy to lose your way, to lose track of that line between untruth and truth. And when you rise up from your sleep, my brother and sister Christians, before your first cup of coffee, before you take the dog out for a walk, before you open the newspaper, before anything else and everything else, put on a breastplate of righteousness. Because you will, in the day that is to unfold, you will be tempted by unrighteousness, by incivility and shoddiness of character, and the small cutting of a corner here, or the tiny wee white lie there. And it will require the protective defenses of a breastplate of righteousness from God to keep you from falling into unrighteousness and unholy harm. And as you rise up from your sleep, before you even let your feet hit the floor, put on your feet whatever it is that will make you ready to live and proclaim the gospel of peace. Because you live and you labor in a violent world. A world that plans for violence, expects it, budgets for it, rehearses for it, makes a business of it. And so to work for peace, to labor for peace, to lobby for peace, will mean that others will think less of you. You will be accused of naivete, or cowardice, or lack of patriotism, or a failure to love soldiers. And while peace sounds so obvious that every beauty king works for it, the fact is it's the hardest thing on earth. And it doesn't begin with the War Department or with the defense budget or with nuclear deterrence. It begins in the secret recesses of your heart and mine with tremendous courage and enormous personal, spiritual strength and discipline. Now, the soldier whom Paul observed from his cell, the soldier who donned armor and took up weapons, he did so for personal, physical protection. He also did so to impress and intimidate, or impress and provide confidence, depending on which side you are on. But the armor of God, that which you and I are called upon to don every day, the armor of God, the equipment of which Paul wrote about from prison, it is invisible. The armor of God will neither impress nor will it intimidate, for our battle, our fight, our struggle is first and foremost, always and forever, against our own inner enemies, our own demons, those inclinations that plague each of us, our lack of discipline, our anger, our cowardice, our propensity to laziness, our pride. Today, this week, at each of our three worship services, we have and are welcoming new members into Old South, into this family of faith. As we welcome them, we initiate them into the ways of God and the ways of Christian discipleship. And these are the tools of our trade. These are the things with which we equip ourselves to live as Christians in this world. And make no mistake about it, the life of the peacemaker, the life of the peacekeeper, is an arduous life and a dangerous life. Ask Martin Luther King Jr. Ask Gandhi. Ask Desmond Tutu. Ask Nelson Mandela. It requires the very best of us. And even at our very best, we cannot do it alone. It requires the prayers of the saints of heaven praying for us. Martin of Tours, the Apostle Paul, urging us on. It requires the whole armor of God and the spiritual resources of 2 millennia of Christian witness and Christian practices, the practices of prayer, spiritual reading, listening, flexing our spiritual muscles, immersion in Christian community. It requires of us, my brother and sister Christians, that we submit ourselves that we might be formed and shaped not by the world out there, but by He in whose name we have gathered, the Prince of Peace, even Jesus Christ. Peace be with you. Amen.